more impromptu, extemporaneous, whatever. Okay, word meanings. Gati, in his movements. Smita, smiling. Prekshana, beholding. Bhashana, talking. Adishu, and so on. Priya, the dear gopis. Priyasya, of their beloved. Pratiruda, fully absorbed. Murtaya, their bodies. Aso, he. Aham, I. Tu, actually. Iti, speaking thus. Abala, the women. Tadatmika, identifying with him. Nyavedishu, they announced. Krishna Vihara, caused by the pastimes of Krishna. Vibrahma, whose intoxication? Translation and purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation, because the beloved gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna, their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech, and his other distinctive features. Deeply immersed in thinking of him and maddened by remembering his pastimes, they declared to one another, I am Krishna. Please repeat, because of the beloved gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna, their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech and his other distinctive features. Deeply immersed in thinking of him and maddened by remembering his pastimes, they declared to one another, I am Krishna. You're not supposed to say that. It's Mayavada. Okay, purport. Spontaneously, the gopis began moving like Krishna. They smiled as he would smile, glanced boldly as he would, and spoke as he would. The gopis were completely absorbed in the existence of Krishna and mad with love at their sudden separation from him. And thus their dedication to him attained absolute perfection. Translation again, because the beloved gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna, their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech and his other distinctive features. Deeply immersed in thinking of him and maddened by remembering his pastimes, they declared to one another, I am Krishna. Om Jnana Tibirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militamina Tarismai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'll just take one more quick look, if I could find that other paper. I'll hope for the best and prepare for the worst. Nope. Anyway, we'll see what we can do. So Sutta Goswami tells the sages, Aham hi krishto yamano bhavadvil achaksha atma vagamo triyavan nabak patant yatma samam patatrina tata samam vishnu gatim vipashtitaha. He says, oh yes, great sages, all of you, as brilliant as the sun, Aryama, I will answer your questions, Krishna, but only up to the level of my realization. Expert personalities, they speak only as much as their realization allows, just as the birds fly in the sky only as far as their capacity allows them to. Yesterday I was overhearing, listening with great interest, fascination, a little bit of jealousy, as we have two devotees, I won't mention their names right now, but you probably know who they are. They're having a very, very elevated discussion on going into the inner workings of the transcendental psychology with no lack of transcendental terminology. Very, very, like finessing the details of what's really, really going on here. This was a little bit during the class, but after the class, the discussion went on for about 15 minutes, and it was fascinating, and it was just the type of discussion that all I could do was listen and get whatever I could from it, but I couldn't contribute anything to it because it was beyond my knowledge, what to speak of my realization. So all I could do is kind of back up a little bit, and instead of going into the prayojana, you might say, move back to sambandha abhideya. I mean, how we approach this. I have this image comes to mind when Satchinandana Swami, a very wonderful sannyasi from Germany, he showed us a slideshow in Boston in 2003. And he had gotten some inspiration from Lord Shiva. Yes. And he felt so inspired, Lord Shiva was going to help him become a better Vaishnava. So he actually tried to do something. He loved danger and adventure. Chayosmi, Vyavasayosmi. Krishna says, I am adventure, Bhagavad Gita. I am victory, etc. So he had that adventurous spirit, and he set up a safari, a trek, it's called, and he decided to go to Mount Kailash. And he showed us photos. Now, nobody goes on Mount Kailash. It's probably easier to climb Mount Everest than climb up Mount Kailash. But you can get close to it if you're very courageous. And some members of the group almost died. One of the pack horses walked away with all the stores, all the supplies. And there they were without their supplies. I mean, so many amazing things happened. It's amazing he lived to tell the story. And he showed these beautiful photos. But the idea was the best he can do was get to the foothills approaching that kind of golden mountain, Mount Kailash. It looked pretty golden, especially in the sunrise, in the slideshow that he showed us. So basically that's the position. That's the position of whatever little I could present. Is how do we approach this? We can take a little bit from this very short purport. This idea that the gopis, they just became Krishna in the sense that they... So obviously, but I'll say it anyway, it's a far cry between the gopis saying, I am Krishna, and the Mayavadis thinking that I'm the Supreme Brahman or yes, you could become God by some process of meditation or something like that. The gopis, they were just so, they went the whole nine yards, as they say in America. They just became so manmana bhava manbhakto. They were so absorbed in Krishna that the shock of his sudden disappearance just electrified them, and they couldn't live without Krishna, so they invoked his presence even in their own persons. They were really, really surrendered, mind, body, and words. So much so that they became, in one sense, Krishna. Union, yoga means union, means to I don't want to use the word merge, what's the proper word, to to unite, to link with the Supreme. So that is exactly what the gopis were able to do, because of their, they didn't have to do anything, it just overcame them, this mood. The mood of separation. At the end of the purport, this short purport, it says, and their dedication, they attained absolute perfection. Because yes, the esoteric understanding is Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Even later on in the 10th canto, and a few chapters later on, where he, how Akrura will cruelly take Krishna away from the gopis and go, Krishna can't leave. Again, he says, I'm always where my devotees chant my glories. The gopis are always chanting his glories. I'm always in the heart of the devotee, tells the Rasa Muni. Not so much in the yogis per se, but in the heart of the bhakti yogis, those kind of yogis. Yoginam apisarvisham tadgatyan antaratana shadavan vachate yamam same yukta at the moment on. So a very, very amazing demonstration. And again, it's such a privilege just to be able to be exposed to this, to be able to hear it, whether we can understand or whether we, at least we have to believe it, that these are real events that are taking place, and the gopis are real people. And Krishna is real. Not only is he real, but he happens to be God. And he has the ability to put the devotees, as well as himself, in the yoga maya, so that these intimate exchanges can take place. So they were what you call absorbed. Vyavasyatmikabuddhi. But in the ultimate sense. So this is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. See Krishna, Chaitanya, what is it? Doya, Karaya Vichara, Vichara, Karile Chite Pabe Charan Kara. If you're interested, and some of us are interested in logic and reason, when I first joined in Boston in 75, I told the devotees that the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam had just come out. So I told the devotees, if you tell me now, like, 2 and 2 is 5, what do you call it? Blooping, I told them. Because I'm already, like, you know, a little bit unbalanced, and it's not going to help me at all. And I'm reading in this fifth canto. Fortunately, at that time, as I mentioned a few times to you, the Bhaktivedanta Institute was just getting underway in the next building. We used to have number 70 Kamayev, so especially Madhava and Sariputta Prabhu, they saved me. So all these guys, they got PhDs in mathematics, chemistry, whatever. Maybe I'll just cool my engines a little bit. They somehow accepted and let me be patient. And they preached to me about our imperfect senses, about basic things. They didn't go into so much technical detail, but they helped me be patient and not run away because things seem so striking. So also, this, the whole idea of Krishna and the gopis, and the whole idea that God, even in India, there's so many people that say, no, Krishna's, we like Krishna, but we don't see how he could really be God, because he's kind of naughty. And he does things which are not according to Shastra. And why would Lord Ramachandra, that's a very nice guy, but how could Krishna be? Isn't it Prana Govinda? People in India, they have doubts about, they think Krishna is immoral. They think he's immoral. So that's also it's kind of stunning in a sense that it's sort of, How do we get to this point where we can hear in the 10th canto, or even just read, not just, but also read Krishna book, and hear these wonderful intimate exchanges, and And not, of course, Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, he says, even if someone reads it and he thinks they're just mythology or fairy tales or whatever, he'll still benefit. Because this is the real thing. This is purifying. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram. Paramam Bhavan. Pavitram. Krishna is the most purifying. So any contact with Krishna, Krishna is non-different from his lila, from his pastimes. So it's very, very purifying. What is that called in Ishopanishad? Antiseptic and prophylactic, what's that term? Apapavidam? Mm-hmm. Apapavidam, that Krishna is glorified, the Lord is glorified as prophylactic and antiseptic. He purifies us, he doesn't become contaminated, and he's like the sun that doesn't become contaminated by any filth or dirty place, but he actually purifies. And I know in my own case, some pretty dirty places, especially in the mind. And then by hearing, we gradually become purified. So, especially since, let me see, I had one page was written the whole sheet on both sides, so that was like 80%. And this page, it just has about 15%. The only thing I have here is, this is in the summary of the entire 10th canto, this chapter is summarized very briefly because it summarizes all 90 chapters at the beginning of the 10th canto in Srimad Bhagavatam. And here it says, chapter 30 contains 44 verses describing how the gopis, being separated from Krishna, went mad and began to wander in the forest in search of him. The gopis met Srimati Radharani, the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, and they all wandered on the banks of the Yamuna searching for Krishna. So one of the things I was thinking of discussing, the only thing I have a good deal of realization of is mad, the idea of being mad. But I think I'll spare you from that. At this time, there was one darshan I had with Srila Prabhupada where that came up. But I think that'll be a little bit outside the scope. So what I would do here is, at this point, as I said, kind of back up and say, how do we get from point A to point B? Coming from the Western world, those of us coming from India, we also had to take a journey to come to Vaishnavism and Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and Srila Prabhupada helped all of us, not just help, but created our good fortune, you might say. And whether we're coming from India or coming from the West, but for us wild Westerners, it was especially amazing trip, especially amazing journey of coming from, in my own case, from an atheistic background to being able to have some appreciation and faith also. Faith, very, very important in what we're hearing. And the first step is that not to be an atheist. To get out of this atheistic world. We're being saturated by atheistic propaganda. Now they have such a thing as an atheist church. This is official. They've established atheist churches now. Actually, even when Prabhupada was physically present, I think it was Prajapati, the theologian? Prajapati Prabhu. He told that there was one theologian, and he came up with, he's an atheist theist. And Prabhupada said, this is ridiculous. I mean, but that's what's going on. In London and in different places around the world, the atheists were there, Mahajan, Richard Dawkins, they're putting up all these big advertisements on buses and kind of making fun of people who believe in God as being very immature. And there's a whole group of atheists, they call themselves the Brights. This is Kali Yuga, by the way. They call themselves the Brights. That's the name of the group. And they're very bright because they're too bright to be, you know, attracted by this childish. And that was all right for previous times, but now we're scientific and we know and all that. Even, what's his first name? Hawking? Stephen Hawking, is it? Even he was a little bit open to some religious perspective, but then unfortunately he lost that, and he went the way of the demons. In his latest book, which is called The Grand Design, he goes all the way and he says, now with the Big Bang, we know for sure, mathematically we can prove there's no need of any God, everything happened just by itself, naturally. So that's still going on tremendously. Atheistic doctrines overshadowing the real meaning of the Vedas. But if I can share you a little of my own path towards, the first thing is the argument by design. In other words, first thing we have to do is accept that it makes sense, a lot of sense. Now you say, why does it have to make sense? Well, some people, it has to make sense. I told the devotees, I mean, if you say 2 and 2 is 5, I just can't take it. In other words, we have to have some kind of rational basis. And Prabhupada explains in Ishopanishad that you can use sense perception, pratyaksha, you can use even mental or philosophical speculation, anuman, as long as it supports and doesn't contradict what we get from Shabda Brahman, that's the real Praman. That has to be, if that's in place and if that's respected, then one can use, just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and let's see if I can do this one, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Doya Karaya Vichara. If you're indeed interested in logic and reason, is there anyone here interested in logic and reason, or are you all way beyond that? Anybody? Nobody? Oh, here's someone. Well, you were giving all that nectar. Okay, so you're still a lot, not a dry logician, but because tarko pratista, that's Mahabharata, that tarko, dry arguments are apratista. They must be inconclusive because they don't have a pratista, they don't have a foundation. You can have a wonderful syllogism, a perfectly logical argument by deduction, and you can't really defeat that. All men are mortal, Socrates is a man, Socrates is mortal. You've all heard that example. So it's perfect, who can defeat it? But ding, problem. By logic alone, all you can show is the relationship between ideas, but you don't have the proof that all men are mortal. Now, don't tell anybody. You'll never believe this, but I used to be a hippie. I don't want you to be shocked now. And in the 60s, on the Lower East Side, some wizard came up to me. I never met him after that. I never met him before that. But some man with like a wizard. There were all these magical people, especially... We thought everyone was more magical than they really were. And he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, how do you know that you're going to die? You don't really know that. You may be living forever. I said, wow, that's kind of sweet. I like that. It sounds pretty good. Yeah, why should I assume? So, you know, someone could tap you on the shoulder, or the scientist can hit you on the head and tell you that we're still working on it. We're isolating the switch that will turn off the aging gene, the molecular switches, you know. So we'll get that, and then we'll just switch it off, and then you can, you know. Or others say, we'll download you to a computer. So instead of having such a fragile body like this, you can have a good, solid. And if that eventually breaks down, then you'll just upload to another machine, and that way you can attain immortality. Because after all you are is some information. And Buddhists think like that too. So the first thing is not to be an atheist. So if we're interested in logic or reason, just apply it to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And if you do that, what will happen? Pabhi chamatkara. You'll find it to be strikingly wonderful. So here's something strikingly wonderful. That by, yes, we could apply it. First step, I don't know if I'm allowed to do this, but very daring, I suppose. You read Michael Behe. B-E-H-E. Oh, Steve DeMooney's going to get on my case now. You read Michael Behe, and his arguments are fantastic. Really, really strong arguments. And even, yes, I have to confess, even after becoming initiated and accepting Srila Prabhupada and following the principles and chanting my minimum 16 rounds, but still, there's this residual, because of such strong samskaras from my upbringing and maybe even previous lives, although I'm not even sure I was human, but whatever, there's still some latent tendency towards atheism. It's just still this idea that, you know, gee, how could it be true? I mean, especially now they're telling me that God becomes a giant boar and lifts up the whole earth from the tusks of, and he becomes a big turtle, and I mean, you know, you think about this. But the first step is to understand that God is there and he's a person. So by reading a book which in my experience or my sense of it, and I keep reading it over the years. I have it as an audio book, and yesterday I was just listening to it as I was doing my very rigorous 15-minute exercise program. And it's called Darwin's Black Box, but that's the one from 2007. The new one is called The Edge of Evolution. And his arguments are very articulate. He gets into the numbers of it. He shows very logically that the idea that just by chance, of course the Darwinians will say, no, it didn't happen by chance, it happened by, now someone said, what's this guy doing? We want the nectar, what is he talking about Darwin? Well, what can I do? You have to crawl before you can walk. You have to walk before you can run. You have to run before you can fly. So I'm just sharing with you how I got to the point where I have faith in these narrations. And the idea was, he just explains that it's so extraordinarily improbable. I mean, that and no scientist would even consider the possibility of something that's like one chance in, a septillion or something, or what to speak of one chance in a Google. The word Google used to mean, it still means, one with like 100 zeros after it. I mean, some ridiculously improbable situation. And he goes and he shows you how improbable it is. It's beyond the scope of today's Bhagavatam class to get into it. But if anyone's interested, I'm always happy to share what I'm learning from this religious person. He's Catholic, and he shows that just that much, that there must be a designer. Then you get all these arguments, even Dawkins gets into it, even Darwin himself, he argued against his own religious feeling. He had religious feeling, he was even brought up to become some kind of priest or minister, but he said, now I'm an atheist, because now after studying it, I could see that there couldn't be, God couldn't have done this, because God, of course, is merciful, and he would never create species that just torture each other the way they do. Of course, nowadays, human beings and throughout history also do a lot of that. It just doesn't make sense. So this is called theodicy. This is the question of evil. And it's so inappropriate for scientists to try to give theological arguments why there can't be God. I mean, of course, that's almost a contradiction to say that it is. That's a whole other issue. The point is that the complexity that we see in nature could not have occurred in the history of the world by just a chance. And they say, oh, no, it's not chance. There's also natural selection. But if you think about it a little bit, the natural selection, survival of the fittest, only reduces the probability. It doesn't increase it. It doesn't do anything. It just filters out many, many combinations that, and it wouldn't work. So Darwinism, Darwin himself said, if we could just find out one example where a certain organism or a certain organ could not have occurred by gradual increments, each increment beneficial for the species over the course of time, then my whole theory would be defeated. So in Darwin's day, they didn't know, but the more scientific evidence comes in, the more complexity we find, and the less likely that, it's not only unlikely, it's just impossible. You can't use it just does not work. It's as simple as that. So then, okay, then we have a designer. What about that how would he create so much, Krishna, why would he create so much suffering and so much difficulty, different species, and then there's things like earthquakes. There's supposed to be a super volcano in Yellowstone Park. That's the latest padam padam tadbi padam situation. So why would Krishna arrange all these things, all these miseries and everything? Well, then you get into theology. What kind of designer he is, what kind of intelligent designer, what kind of person he is, that's the next step. And then we get the mercy of Sri Guru Parampara. And also it's logical, it makes sense. Yes, oh right. It's not that this material world is the whole deal. Material world is just a shadow, it's not the substance. It's only like a virtual reality. It isn't ground reality. It doesn't have substance, it's only the shadow. Everything here is temporary. It's just, yes, that my experience backs that up, and also my logic, my little intelligence also makes that very, very clear, that there's nothing, as the Beatles song said in the Revolver album, nothing is real. Oh no, that's after Strawberry Fields one. Nothing is real. Yes, because what is the definition of substantial reality is that it never ends, it's eternal. So why not? Why can't there be a spiritual world? And Ishopanishad, in the introduction, or one of the first purports, where it said, how will you know that there's a spiritual world? How can you know that? So, yes, we're conditioned, it's beyond our experience, but it makes sense that there's something. What is a symptom? What is an empirical, that means by my own experience, what is an evidence that there's something beyond matter? Experience itself. Consciousness itself. I'm not talking about consciousness, how my eyes, nowadays not so good, but how it sees something. But the very fact that I'm experienced, whether I'm experiencing reality or illusion or whatever, but the fact that I'm having experience indicates that there's something beyond what I'm experiencing. There's something beyond it. There's consciousness. Yes, I think, therefore I am. It makes some sense. So then we get to the next step, that the material world is not the only thing that God ever did, was just create this world. He made it just like a prison house. And we go on, and we all know how, where that goes to, where the logic proceeds. So here, in these verses in Bhagavatam, we're hearing about not just beyond birth and death, but beyond any tinge of any illusion or whatsoever. Of course, you have illusion, you have everything is there. You have exchanges, you have magic, you have everything in the material world, practically speaking, is there in its original form. But there's no trace of any type of material lust, for instance. There's no trace. First of all, they're not dealing, these are not material bodies that we're hearing about. And it makes sense and increases our faith. And not only is there a God, a designer, but he is good. Yes, God is good. And in order for us to have our independence, he made this very problematical place called the material world. But when one sees it in the broad perspective, how does that? Vishvam puna sukhayati. Then one sees even the material world, it's all coming from Krishna. So that's why we don't say it's false. But what we think is going on here, that's false. That's just names and forms. Atakavir namashu yavadartha syada pramato vyavasaya buddhi. What is it? Sidenya tartena yatita tatra samikshamam tatra. Parishramam tatra samikshamana. That intelligent person, the kavi, you understand now because it's getting late, he only endeavors for the minimum necessities of life while in the world of names. That's called namashu. He never endeavors for anything else, knowing that it's just a useless waste of time. And then in the purport, Prabhupada makes this long list, including bungalows. You know what bungalows are? Like little houses in the country. And railroads and peace and war, and makes a long list of all these things. And they're just like just bubbles in the ocean, and they're just like babbling, just the world of names. These are called upadis. We try to crystallize something, we try to capture something, put a name on it, and then we call that reality. But actually, these are just configurations of Krishna's energy. And because we're trying to lord it over, that's another thing. When the gopis here, I'm actually referring to the purport now, when the gopis and the verse, when they say, I am Krishna, it's nothing like the Mayavad, I am Krishna. It's nothing like some type of other materialistic idea that, we're all God, we're going to become God. Because that desire is material. In other words, it's the idea of lording it over. The gopis weren't even aware of Krishna's divinity in that sense. So there was no question that on their agenda, when they say, I'm Krishna, it was because I want to lord it over. Even though it says that one of the things they did was they looked at one another very boldly and with transcendental conjugal desire, you might say. Not that they had that, but they were just imitating Krishna. And even though they were doing that, but their I am Krishna, their mood that I am Krishna, it was only out of madness, transcendental madness, because they were so moved by, so shocked by the sudden separation. It had nothing to do whatsoever, I am Krishna so I can be God and lord it over. So on that note, it says here they attain absolute perfection by becoming mad with love of God. Yes, Prabhupada told Allen Ginsberg, yes, we should become mad for Krishna. When Allen Ginsberg heard the Gambira something, one of the words in the 26 qualities of the devotees, and Allen Ginsberg started chuckling. And he told Prabhupada, he said, yes, I think I'm advancing in all these qualities except sane. They translated in those days as sane. He said, that's the only one. And Prabhupada said, no, we must become insane. We must become mad for Krishna. And here's the kind of madness that we should aspire for as we go up slowly, slowly from, in my case, say, from atheism to theism, from theism to, there's no contradiction that there is a material world, and going up the ladder, the ultimate ladder to what we're hearing this morning. So I'll stop here, and I hope it wasn't too disjointed, because I'm coming from a distant place, not just Miami, to understand this. So, you can ask any question. Or... Yes, Makundabu.
So, nothing so esoteric about gopis or anything this morning, but when you mentioned how Krishna is naughty, I had this question for years and years, why Krishna would be so extremely naughty. Like if he would go to steal butter or anything and he was unsuccessful, he would pinch the babies in that house or urinate in the storeroom. And I was thinking, this is really extreme, and I couldn't digest why he would be so naughty. So then the acharyas have written that the qualities of parental love, vatsalya praying, has four elements. One is called palana, which means to give protection. Poshana means to nourish. Tanda Bartsana means to chastise your child for their welfare so they'll grow up properly. And Sanka Amangala means apprehension, like if you don't see your child, you're worried what happened. So because Mother Yashoda is the archetype, the model
archetype
of these feelings, then if Krishna was not naughty, these things in her seva would not be nourished. So the Acharyas wrote, unlike Ramachandra Bhagavan, who was an ideal child, Krishna was the other extreme. And in this way, Mother Yashoda's love was able to pour out in her natural service to him in those four categories. So she always thought, where's Krishna? What is he doing? Why is he doing this? He was always being naughty. Then it says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Nimai, was even worse. So they said if you made a deity of Sachima, one position she'd have is like this. Like pounding it, because Nimai was so naughty, so extremely naughty.
What can I do with my son? Many mothers have the consternation. Thank you. Thank you for that. Mm. Yeah, in one sense, though, being naughty is also, in one sense, ideal. In that, of course, you're saying he went the extra mile in being naughty. But sometimes a child is precocious and naughty. It shows some intelligence that he's doing like that. But I'm not an expert in this field. But yes, it's very nice. How Krishna would act like that to engage more and more, to have more rasa, more engagement, just like the famous eating the dirt. And, you know, she's concerned, you know, you eating dirt, you know, to chastise you. Both raised hands. Let me give Maitreya a chance.
Yeah.
Maitreya, please.
Maharaj, we cannot understand Krishna by logic. You have made that statement, right?
Why not?
We can apply logic to the absolute truth.
By logic
truth.
Alone, you can't. Logic
no.
alone
okay.
has no foundation. Logic
right.
alone will not give you any conclusion.
I'd like to ask
but
a question.
But you have to have shabda to get that first, like for instance, all men are mortal. That you get from shabda. Chatasi hidvo mature, ya, bas. Then you have the foundation. Then logic is very useful when it backs up the shabda. Yeah.
Mm.
And it's based on shabda.
So, a question I'd like to ask, please. What is the use of logic in human society? What is the place of logic?
Well, logic is necessary, even to eat, sleep, make, and defend. The problem is that you don't necessarily become sane. You don't necessarily become, like Prabhupada wrote that pamphlet, who is crazy? So it can be very, very logical. As Prabhupada would point out, you start off 2 and 2 is 5, getting back to that again. And then you make very logical, very proper calculations, but your conclusion will always be wrong. So, but then human society lives in, like within a madhouse, you can have a certain order. In other words, everybody may be mad, but amongst all the mad people, they can make some enlightened self-interest. They can, you know, because they have these big brains. You know, these human beings, they got these big brains. You know, the animals once had a convention in the forest, and what are we going to do? These humans are so intelligent, we don't know how to deal with them. So yeah, we have this human body, we got these big brains. So within the scope of madness, we can become very, very coordinated sometimes. Sometimes it breaks down, as we see in modern America, things are just kind of breaking down right before our eyes. But so because the animals, they everything is instinct. And human beings, they have to use their brain. They learn just for eating, sleeping, making, and defending. But that doesn't mean that they're actually human in the real sense. So you say, what is the use of logic? It's useless for actually fulfilling the purpose of human life, for becoming a better addition than the animals. It's pretty good. You can use logic and mathematics and science and all that for lording it over the material energy for a short time until karma comes and whacks you behind the head. That's all I can do on that right now, but we can discuss. Prana, Govinda, and then Stita Devi Muni, and then Prabhu.
But that's that you can put a logic and reason on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. That's how Prabhupada put it. And if you do, Prabhupada says, then that's where your mind will be fixed at the lotus feet of Krishna.
Yeah. Right.
So logic
makes
has
you stronger, makes you even stronger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's actually the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna
yes,
Das Kaviraj.
Chaitanya Daya Karaho Vichar, yeah. Vichar Kurile Chitta Pavishan.
Right. Thank you.
I was going to say that even though Nimai Vishambar's naughtiness is glorified, but that naughtiness has a background, is only one principle, is the mercy. Any naughtiness you narrate, I mean, more or less, I was making a chart and I found everything. Even like early morning, Nimai would go out and he would lock the door of those Brahmana, that Brahmavadi, from outside. Now in India, Vedic culture, they don't have a toilet within the house. You have to go outside far. So when the Brahmana would wake up, they could not open the door. What's going on? Whispering amongst the wife and husband. Why is it not opening? I need to go right now. I'm under pressure. Then after a while, started no more whispering. Why? Who did this? Then started screaming, roaring. Then through the window, see Nimai is laughing. Ha ha. Then they got like completely furious. Finally, somebody, neighbor hears it, they come and open it. And from that day, that Brahman who did not believe the form of God, constantly thinking about Nimai. Every day morning he gets up, is the door open, Nimai, Nimai, he always mischievous. This is mercy of Nimai.
Right. Also that naughtiness, like when he stole the offering when the Brahman came to the house and he was kept stealing the offering one time, two times, three times, and then he revealed. So ultimately it flows into mercy. I mean, you see the...
But Maharaj, very nice class though, I appreciate it. It was very nice class. And I was thinking like this Unmad Dasa that the gopis are experiencing. It's interestingly that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also exhibiting that he went in the ocean and the fishermen caught him. So I was thinking while you were speaking that Swarup Damodar, who was searching. And
the fishermen caught him in the ocean.
The
you all know that pastor.
They are searching for him. And then fisherman, he's also chanting Hare Krishna. Fisherman is also some sort of Vaishnava, but he did not have an eligibility to understand what is the gopi's mood that Lord Chaitanya was exhibiting. So as a result, Swarup Damodar did not see the qualification. He rather gave him a slap. Don't worry, this is the mantra I'm chanting, now you're deghosted, you go back home, everything will be fine.
Yeah, now you're exercised.
But he got the highest Unmad Dasa of Lord Chaitanya, but he missed it.
Right, inconceivable mercy.
Inconceivable.
But did the fisherman, did he ever become Krishna conscious and become devotee, or he just stayed?
He became very advanced. Touching Mahaprabhu was Unmad Dasa, of course.
Right.
But it took a little question of Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur put. There's a famous verse, Adhikara nalabhya siddha deha bhave viparjaya buddhi janme shaktira bhave. If one is not knowing his eligibility, but he's thinking something, I am that, or some kind of higher stage, like gopi mood or something, that thought itself will become a crooked intelligence for him to fall down. So be very careful.
Yeah, that's why I started the class with Aham Hipishto Yamanova Padvivus. Krishna is also naughty even with gopis too, and that works in a little different way. But, now we had Stephen D. Mooney. Please, Professor Mooney, don't be too technical now.
No, I love Michael Behe.
Good.
Okay, so you don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
But the logic thing, I mean, just raising the question and answering it is filled with all kinds of exercises and logic. So we're not going to avoid engaging logic as human beings. But I guess as far as practitioners of bhakti yoga, it depends what we're using that logic for. What's the purpose? What's the motivation in the heart?
Yeah, well, there's you know, you have logic about logic, logic about logic. You have these what called meta discussions. But that's why, anyway. We can talk about that later. Okay, now we have this other Prabhu. Did he leave already? Or is he? Didn't you want to say something? What is your name, Prabhu?
My name is Dr. Charles.
Dr. Charles. Okay.
I'm I attended an interesting lecture by a Caltech astrophysicist by the name of Hugh Ross, and you know, he says you come to a belief in a sort of organizing deity or God by means of logic or through emotion. Of course, he comes through logic, being an astrophysicist. So apparently you can calculate the odds of intelligent life occurring anywhere in the universe. And he says when he first started doing these calculations, he came to the figure of 10 to the minus 200. And then he says you get further, more scientific information, the odds lengthen. And the figure that he had at the time was 10 to the minus 1400. Which is a number that is, it's a tiny number that is, or larger, depending on how you look at it. And he said it's more than all the protons in the entire universe, if you can get your mind around
that.
So how
could he not be a theist? How could he not subscribe to an intelligent design if he could see it couldn't happen by a random process?
He did. He was a Christian. This is the point.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Right.
And he said there's plenty of
no fun.
closet Christian astrophysicists as well, but they can't admit it, so...
Very good.
Sarangeva Sarabhuk, Kusalani Asu Siddhanti, Itarani Kitani Jat. Srila Prabhupada translated that when King Parikshit saw the Kali, this was his conclusion, that he did not kill Kali. He gave him his place. He could have killed, all the problem is solved. Why King Parikshit did not kill Kali? As Srila Gurgunda Maharaj spoke on that Prabhupada's purport, that this every devotee must be carefully analytically understand this point, that King Parikshit could have killed, but he did not kill. He says that Saranga Iva Sarabhu, Saranga means the essence taker, like a bee, bumblebee. Mm. Bumblebee goes to the garden. He is not interested who made the garden, who planted those trees and flower, what color of the flower, how many leaves. He does not do anything. He just goes there, suck the honey, and get out. And each devotee, if they do not focus on Krishna consciousness, just main principle that Prabhupada gave, then the Kali will make all this argument, logic, and these, that they will be like spending whole life and gone without chanting.
Mm. Well, that's true. But when Kali attacks me with all these arguments, then, of course, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, but then he keeps attacking me. So sometimes I have a safety net, which is more powerful arguments, that Krishna gives the intelligence. We have more powerful arguments than Kali could. Even Shankaracharya, even Lord Shiva gives arguments, and by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, even that we could defeat. So we have to have, and also for preaching, it's very important to have an argument. But I appreciate your point. We shouldn't take shelter. But we shouldn't be complacent and think we're so powerful. All right. Anyone last word on Mataji's? Anybody? Last word? Last word is Hare Krishna, I guess. Do our business and get out. Okay. Good deal. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granthirai Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai.